My next guest on The King Review is causing a bit of a storm, shall we say. He was on the cover of the Weekend Australian magazine just a couple of weeks ago, a fantastic in-depth story, really talking about his thoughts and his hopes for the future of the Labor Party. His name is Joel Fitzgibbon. He is the member for Hunter. Joel, welcome to The King Review.
Nice to be with our former Cessnock boy.
We should say that. We share the hometown, beautiful Cessnock there in the Hunter. How is the Hunter going through the pandemic? How's tourism going in that part of the world?
Well, I was more loyal than you, mate. I'm still here and have been for 55 years, and they'll carry me out of here in a box. But of course, our tourism industry is going fabulously well. I say that reluctantly because I know how tough they're doing it in your part of the world, but we have this advantage of being a 2-hour drive from Sydney. Everyone's trying to escape Sydney, and of course, first port of call is the beautiful Hunter Valley Vineyard area, and we've got weddings, balloon rides, wine tasting, great golf, you name it, we have it, so we're very, very fortunate.
Well, we don't want to talk about too much how wonderful the Hunter is going at the moment. As you said, very, very tough here in Cairns, given how far away we are from capital cities. Now, Joel, look, I loved that article. It was pretty warts and all, that cover story, I thought, in the Weekend Australian. It didn't mince words. Now, you've been in Parliament now for about 25 years. Labor's only been in power for 6 of those. That's a long time in the wilderness. Just for listeners here in North Queensland, tell us a bit of a summary almost of you've been on this campaign now for a little while, just about your thoughts on the Labor Party. Where has it gone wrong, and what would you like to see happen with the party going forward?
Yeah, you were spot on, Gavin. I celebrated my 25th year in the Parliament on March 2. Was that only last week?
Last week.
So I've been around for a while, and I served for 8 years on Cessnock Council before that. So I've been elected representative for a long, long time. And I represent a seat which has been held by Labor consistently without a break from about 1904, I think it was held by both the protectionists and the free traders in the early years of the Federation.
Since about Federation, that's right, formation.
Yeah,
but
from about the first 6 years, it was taken by Labor, and we've held it ever since. And it hasn't always been a safe seat. It depends on the electoral boundaries, which change, as you know, from time to time. But it's considered traditional Labor, and as it should be, it has its economic beginnings in the coal mining industry, and the steelworks, the aluminium smelters, and the like. So it's been very much a working-class community, but our primary vote has been getting chipped away by conservative forces. Why? Because I think there's a general perception in many working-class areas, particularly parts of Queensland, central and north Queensland, there's a view that Labor has sort of walked away from its traditional support base in search of more progressive votes, and that's causing problems for us.
It's such a fine line. It's such a dance, isn't it, Joel, though? Because, you know, how does a party, and the Libs and the Nats have this to a certain extent as well, but how does the Labor Party appeal to those capital city electorates? Here in Queensland, for example, we had the former Deputy Premier, Jackie Trad, who's from the very far left of the Labor Party here in Queensland. She lost her inner city Brisbane seat to the Greens for the very first time. How does the Labor Party walk this fine line between appealing to progressives in the capital cities, but as you said, particularly in regional Queensland, as we saw at the last federal election, and obviously your seat and other parts of Australia? How do you dance this fine line between progressives and the more working class roots of the party?
I'm certainly not suggesting it's easy. It's not. It's very challenging, and it's a complexity the Labor Party has been dealing with now for some decades. But it's most difficult for us because we are a party of government which relies on the opportunity to form a majority in the House of Representatives in our own right. Where the Liberal and National parties can, you know, band together after an election and do it in a coalition. So, you know, it's easy for Scott Morrison to be saying one thing in Sydney and Melbourne and, you know, George Christensen saying something very different in central Queensland.
Very different.
And they get away with that.
very different.
We are the biggest party in the country, and we are one party, and therefore it's a more challenging thing for us. If Anthony Albanese is saying one thing in Sydney, then there's an expectation that the candidate in, say, Flynn in central Queensland might be saying something similar. And that's causing us problems, and it's never going to be easy, but I don't believe in recent years we've struck the right balance. Anastasia Palaszczuk, I believe, showed at the most recent Queensland election that that balance can be struck. It's not easy, and we just haven't been doing so.
Is Anthony Albanese the right person to lead the Labor Party?
Yeah, I believe he is. And, you know, I'm far less concerned about the messenger as I am concerned about the message. And, you know, I think he's attempted to bring us further back to the centre since he became the leader after the 2019 election. But I think he's got a bit of a way to go. I think he needs to get out into the coal mining communities, visit the coal mines, the abattoirs, the gas projects, as Anastasia Palaszczuk did. I mean, she announced a new coal mine in the heart of, in the middle of the election campaign recently. And, you know, Anthony Albanese, he's yet to visit a coal mine. I mean, there's a stark contrast there, and I think we need to address that.
And I can't remember, Joel, the last time Albo was in our part of the world, for example, in North Queensland. So it is a good point. Now, you were Minister for Defence for a couple of years. You've been on the backbench now for a little while. Are you, like, your thoughts going forward for your own career, pending you win the next election, which was very tight, we should tell listeners. It was one of the tightest elections in your seat for many, many years. I think a One Nation candidate got fairly close. Would you like to step back up to the front bench at some point? But have you damaged that potential career move, given how outspoken you've been about the party?
Just to share the complexity of it with your listeners, my election was very close, but I actually now sit on a 3% margin, which many members, as you know, would like to have. My difficulty was the risk of the One Nation vote rising above the National Party vote, and if that had happened, all the NAPS preferences would have gone to One Nation, I probably would have lost. So it was close, but not close in that sense. But the point about that is that the National Party went backwards too. So there was a huge protest vote in my electorate, which went to One Nation. What was the process about? Neither of the major parties looking after, you know, traditional blue-collar, high-vis workers, and we certainly have to address that. I'll play any role in the party that is necessary to get the party back on track. We've won a majority of the seats in the House of Representatives just once in the last 27 years. We've won government from opposition just three times since the Second World War. We have to do a lot better, and I spend all my day doing whatever I can to make Labor more competitive again at the federal level.
I loved Barnaby Joyce's comments in that Weekend Australian cover story, the magazine cover story, where he almost suggested Barnaby's quite happy to have you on the backbench, because if you were leader, you'd cause them trouble. On that, I mean, do you need to put your hand up for much more of a leadership role? Because I think the common sense that you're talking about the future of the Labor Party and just that, more of that back to that middle ground. I mean, for the sake of the party, don't they need someone like you who can appeal across a broad spectrum of the electorate?
I believe the strength I bring is that I live in, work in, and understand rural and regional Australia. I know how people think outside of our capital cities. I know what their opportunities and challenges are. I know what their aspirations are. And, you know, every political party has to have people like me around the decision-making tables in Canberra, so that the views of those people is being reflected inside the room and communicated inside the room. And that's been one of Labor's problems. We over many elections, we've lost more and more regional representatives, and it's a sort of a downward spiral. If they're not in the room, they're not making the case, and the policy outcomes aren't conducive to good results in regional Australia.
Obviously, a big part of your concern about the direction and the messaging of the Labor Party centres around climate policy. For listeners who may not be across where you stand on the issue of climate change, I think you've said that you certainly believe in the science of climate change, but if you could just explain a little bit about what is your position on climate change and what the government should be doing about it.
It's an important question, Gavin, because I get framed as a climate change denier or something like it. It's simply not true. I believe the climate is changing in adverse ways. I think humankind is making a contribution, and I think collectively we need to act. But the Labor Party has this habit of convincing itself that it's a net electoral winner. It doesn't see it through the prism of the climate, but political opportunity. And we keep overreaching on climate change policy, and as a result, we end up with great climate change policies, but we remain in opposition. And therefore, those climate change policies stay in the top drawer after every election. So they're not doing the climate or the environment much good. So I've been advocating a more sensible and moderate approach. I mean, as a country, we are just 1.3% of global emissions, and we need to do our bit. We need to have the credibility that comes from doing a bit to preach the gospel to others in international fora. But, you know, we've got to take people with us. And climate change is important to people, but first and foremost, what is important to them is their personal and economic security. And we can't be seen to be pursuing ambitious climate change policies at the cost of financial security for Australian families.
I don't know about you, but I don't see a clear transition plan when it comes to this issue. In terms of jobs, in terms of the workers, there is a transition globally underway. We know that, towards renewables and away from coal. Different countries are moving at different speeds, of course. Are you happy with any progress that's being made on that long-term transition plan from government or from the Labor Party?
The thing that frustrates me most, Gavin, is that we don't talk about our success. I mean, our global emissions in absolute terms have fallen 19% since their peak in 2007. Since 1990, our per capita emissions have fallen 46%. The carbon intensity of our economy has fallen 64%.
But we don't hear much about that, too, as you said.
No, we don't.
It's about how bad we're travelling.
The Labor Party keeps crying chicken little. You know, the sky is falling. We're not doing enough. Well, we're doing substantial. We could do more, I think. But we've done a lot. And business and investors aren't waiting for governments to fiddle anymore. They're just getting on with it. You know, our trucks are the best now, the best and the latest pollution equipment, as do our cars. Our manufacturers are putting in the best kit, not just because of emissions, but because it drives efficiencies and lifts profits. We've taken to solar rooftop like ducks to water, the fastest uptake in the world. You know, in the last 2 years, we've installed solar with a capacity the equivalent of six coal-fired power stations. You know, it's happening, and our economy is changing all the time. So I don't use the word transition. I mean, every sector, every business is in a form of transition. And our coal generators will come to the end of their physical and economic lives at some point. The last one, which is in Queensland, in about 2050. The first one next to go will be in my electorate in 2 years' time, Liddell. And when they go, they probably won't be replaced by coal generators. And, you know, obviously that industry is very much in transition, but our coal mining industry is not. We export about nearly 90% of our coal to Asian markets, and that coal will be in demand in those Asian markets for many decades to come.
Well, Joel Fitzgibbon, for the good of the Labor Party and indeed the good of the nation, it'd be great to see you back in the fray, back on the front bench, be that in opposition or in government. Joel, thanks so much for being on the King Review.
Thanks, Kevin. Can I just say, I do know how tough things are up there. Warren Entz tells me, Don Farrell, our shadow tourism minister, tells me, and we are thinking of people up there, and I hope that in the budget, the government comes up with a decent package to help your local economy.
Hear, hear. Thanks very much, Joel.
Good on you, mate. Cheers.